is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Gannon Baker, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years, and now with its integrated web platform, coaches have the ability to add video to plays and share them directly to their players' Android and iPhones via their mobile app. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching content and resources through their blog and PlayBank. For access to these plays and more information, visit FastModelSports.com or follow them on Twitter at FastModel.
We allow our guys to play pickup against the other teams in the city, the pros, if they want to come up and get some games in with those guys.
Ash Howard is in his third season as the head coach of the storied LaSalle University men's basketball program. Known as one of the most dynamic recruiters in the country, Howard has revamped the LaSalle roster by focusing on talented student-athletes from the East Coast. Prior to his arrival at LaSalle, Howard spent five seasons as an assistant coach at Villanova, helping the Wildcats to a pair of national championships. During his time with the Wildcats, Howard was involved in all aspects of the program, including on-court teaching, player development, and recruiting. Prior to Villanova, Howard accrued a decade's worth of college coaching experience at three different stops. He began his coaching career as a student assistant coach at his alma mater, Drexel University, in 2002 after injury cut short his playing career for the Dragons. In 2004, following graduation, Howard was hired as an assistant coach at LaSalle by Dr. John Giannini. He spent 4 years with the Explorers before returning to Drexel in 2008 as an assistant coach to James Bruiser Flint. In 2012, Howard served as an assistant on Chris Mack's staff at Xavier University before landing back in his hometown with Villanova. We recently launched the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring service to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavaliers Central, Grizz and Grind, Knuck If You Buck, The 305 Culture, Blazing the Path, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, and X's and O's NBA Breakdown. Spanning the Spurs and the LA Hoops Report are coming soon. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Grab your notebook and jot down some wisdom from Ash Howard, head men's basketball coach at LaSalle University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klimsing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to be joined by the head men's basketball coach at LaSalle University, Ashley Howard. Ashley, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, thanks for having me, man. Excited to share my story with you guys and and let's get to it.
Let's do it. A lot of fun. We're looking forward to it, digging in and learning more about your basketball journey and pulling out some things that coaches in the audience can take from and learn. So let's start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball and what made you fall in love with the game.
You know, I can't even necessarily tell you the first experiences, but my first recollection is just being at basketball camp as a kid. My grandfather was the chef at Coach John Chaney's camp when I was a young fella. And this probably goes back to maybe like 3-4 years old. My grandfather started taking me to the camp with him for 2 weeks every summer. And, you know, just the memories of, you know, being a little kid running around, stealing basketballs from guys, like when he was dribbling, like running up from behind them, stealing the ball, having a small t-shirt that I'm swimming in, like hanging down to my knees and being, you know, around the game and just watching the older kids play and trying to emulate, you know, the things that I saw. Those are my first memories. And then, you know, as I got older, just being at the camp, John Chaney Sunny Hill basketball camp, you know, my first competitive moments came from like recognizing, okay, like, kids are getting trophies at the end of the week. I want a trophy, you know, and what do I need to do to position myself to get a trophy? And, you know, my first trophy came from winning like the free throw competition at like 8 years old. You know, I went 10 for 10 from the foul line and I won my age group. It was like 12 and under. That was my first trophy. And I was excited about it. And you know, that was my first competitive memory. So, you know, my love for the game started at a very early age. I have a 2-year-old son, and it amazes me how much, you know, he loves the game. And I just assume that that's how I was, because I can't remember a time where basketball wasn't a significant part of my life.
Was basketball always your main sport? Did you play anything else growing up?
I didn't play anything else, man. I was a basketball junkie, and my mother used to always tell me that all you care about is basketball. All you care about, you don't care about anything else but basketball. And you know, she constantly reminded me that the world is bigger than just basketball. And you know, God rest my mom's soul. You know, basketball has been good to me. It's been good to our family. And you know, the time spent investing in the game has been paid back to me by the good Lord tenfold.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things. I always go back to a statement that I've heard several coaches say, and people have shared it with me on the podcast, and I think it's definitely true, that there's magic in the ball, and it goes in a lot of different ways in terms of the impact in your life, but also in terms of the relationships and the people that you get a chance to meet and interact with as a result of the game of basketball. And as you know, it's such a small world in terms of how easy it is to be connected to people or just somebody that you know that knows somebody else. The basketball world is really, I mean, it's incredible, as you know. So thinking back on your time as a high school player, can you pull out one or two favorite memories that you have of being a high school basketball player, something that sticks out in your mind when you think back at that time in your life, something that you're like, wow, I'm never going to forget that?
Oh, so one of the things that I'll never forget, I was, I thought I was really good. And I was playing for an AAU team, playing for the New Jersey All-Stars. And, you know, it was a South Jersey-based AAU program. And for those that aren't familiar with the Philly area, so like South Jersey and Philly are like right next to each other. It's like you go over the bridge and you're right in Camden, New Jersey. So there was an AAU program that was based out of South Jersey, but it had a lot of Philadelphia area players on it. And, you know, I'm playing for the program, a guy named Frank Berg. And, you know, he took us down to Orlando for the Orlando National Tournament Super Showcase. And we did relatively well. I think we finished eighth in the country. We had a really good team. Then we came back, and in the fall he introduced me to a guy he said was joining our team named Jay Williams. And it's DJ Williams that played at Duke, who's a ESPN commentator. And I remember my first time playing with him, and I thought I was good. And then I played alongside this dude. I'm like, yo, this dude is unbelievable, right? So, yep. My whole life, I always, played up because I was mature for my age. And in my own age group, I always felt like, there was nobody that I couldn't, have my way with that was my age, to be honest. And then I played with Jay, and I was like, this dude is different. And it was a humbling experience for me. But he was a great guy. He was a phenomenal player. But it was one of those moments where I realized, like, yo, man, like, I might not be as good as I think I am. You know what I mean?
Either you better get back in the gym, or you better have a plan B, right?
No question, man. And my plan was like, yo, I need to get back in the gym. I need to work. I need to get stronger. This dude is quick. He's athletic. He can shoot. He's skilled. And I was just like, wow, man, this dude, and he's my position. Like he's a point guard, right? And that was a reality check for me. It really made me more focused, but it also put in the back of my mind, like, yo, there are some really, really good players out here. If I want to make it to the highest level, then it's going to take an extraordinary effort, and I got a lot of work to do to get there.
So what did that work look like? I'm just curious, what did you do once you kind of made the realization that, hey, I got to get a lot better? Were you working by yourself? Were you finding pickup games? And if you were working by yourself, what were the things that you were doing? Where were you going to figure out, hey, what do I need to do? What kind of drills? What kind of things am I going to work on?
Well, you know what, man? During that time, we didn't drill. We didn't really do drills. We played. We played yep. ball, man. So for me, it was more of a reality check, a wake up call. I played a lot of ball as is already, but I didn't do a lot of lifting in high school. Like that wasn't really. The thing, I wasn't being told that it was important at that time. So, I just was playing, man, just playing as much ball as I could, against the best competition that I could, finding, the runs with the local college guys, going up to Temple and Drexel and University of Pennsylvania and playing against the college guys. One of the beautiful things about Philly is, you got six Division I schools here in the city. And for a young guy, like, I had buddies of mine that played on all the teams in the city. So, I had the opportunity to go up and play with, Michael Jordan and one of my dear friends, Lamar Plummer, rest in peace to Lamar, and Lynn Greer at Temple. And during that time, like, Temple had some great teams. So I would have the opportunity to go up there and play with those guys and just, get a chance to just, work and compete against college level talent. So that was my way of just trying to, put myself in a position to get better. But the culture today is so different. It's like, you get with your workout guy, guys got personal trainers. I didn't lift the weight until I got to college. So that's just one of the things that, that was just different, back in, when I was in high school during the late 90s, we weren't being told like, yo, you got to lift, you got to do these drills, you got to, what's your vertical jump?
Like, right, exactly.
I had no idea what my vertical was. I knew it wasn't the same as Jay Williams. but yeah, man, those are the things that I did during that time.
So what's the pickup basketball scene look like in Philly? Because I think one of the things that we've talked to a bunch of coaches on here about this is the fact that pickup basketball and outdoor basketball to a large degree has completely declined. And I'm about 10 years probably older than you. So I graduated from high school in 88 and graduated from college in 92. Mm-hmm. And when I was playing, we'd get done with our season at Kent State where I played, and they'd hand me like a 3-page ditto of like, hey, man, here's your workout for the summer. we'll see you back here in August. And then I just went, and just like you, man, I went and played pickup basketball and tried to find the best games and all that stuff. But at that time, you know, you didn't have the same ability as a Division I program to work your guys out in the summer and all the things and have people on campus. So what does the pickup basketball scene look like in Philly today compared to what it looked like when you were playing?
Well, unfortunately, just based on the pandemic, it was completely shut down this past spring, summer. So pre-COVID, it was pretty good because, you know, like I said, we have the six Division I schools here. So like I could send my team up to Villanova to play pickup, and the guys from Temple could come up and play pickup.
So you guys do mix, like?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
We mix it up, and then we have a ton of pros that are from our area, that so when they're home, LaSalle is one of the hubs in the city to have pros come up and play in the summertime. So, you know, at times, even though we have the rules where we can work with our guys, you know, we don't overuse that. You know, we may work out maybe twice during the week just to make sure our guys are getting some adequate skill work in. But, you know, we allow our guys to play pickup against the other teams in the city, the pros, if they want to come up and get some games in with those guys. In terms of the outdoor scene, I don't think kids play outdoors that much anymore. I think everybody is way more sophisticated, man. I think you have, you know, the parents that played outdoors that are ridden by tendonitis from all their time playing on the asphalt, and then they're committed to not allowing their kids to have the same issues, right? So, you know, everybody's trying to find that local, you know, community center or getting a membership at that gym where, you know, they could utilize the gym and not have to have their kid running around on the asphalt.
Yeah, it's a different world. There's no question about that. And there's, I think, positives and negatives to both scenarios. And you could probably argue back and forth. And I think us old guys tend to favor the playground system over the trainer and in a gym system. But it's definitely, there's definitely some differences. And I'm sure as a college coach, you see some of the impact of just the way guys are brought up in the game today compared to how it used to be. So going back and thinking to your time again as a player, you get an opportunity to go and to play at Drexel University, but you get injured. And is at that point when you start thinking about coaching, or had coaching already been on your radar prior to that?
So, you know, my uncle and my dad, they both were coaches, and, you know, they would work camps in the summer. So, you know, my dad played at the University of Maryland. So every year, you know, he would go down to the University of Maryland for 2 weeks and work Coach Gary Williams' camp. I went to Coach Williams' camp. My uncle would go down and work Coach Williams' camp with my father. And my uncle would also work Phil Martelli's camp at St. Joe's. He would work Coach Cheney's camp. So, you know, when I was a senior in high school, I started working those camps before I went to, like, you know, when I had a gap before I went to summer school, you know, just so I can make some money. And you know, during that time working those camps, like, I really fell in love with, like, working with young kids, you know, doing stations and drills. And I was a kid that went to basketball camp growing up. So it was something that was really sort of embedded in me. And I just loved the camp experience, and I had the opportunity to, you know, provide that same experience to young people that I had. It was something that I really fell in love with. So, you know, when I was unfortunately shut down from playing, you know, then it was almost like, all right, you know, you just, you know, transition. You can stay around the game. You know, fortunate enough for me, you know, Coach Bruiser Flint, he encouraged me to, you know, stay around the team. And, you know, I love my teammates. So, you know, I wanted to just be around for those guys, support them, you know, tell those guys what I saw. I was a, you know, starter as a sophomore at the point guard spot. So, you know, I was probably one of the most experienced guys returning. So the guys on the team respected me. I had opportunity to really, you know, be a leader from the sidelines, which was something that, You know, I thank my teammates for just, you know, allowing me to have that type of role during that time. But, you know, it was just a really a natural progression for me. And you know, coaching was probably always my calling. I believe that God orders our steps. And, you know, he took something away from me that I thought was the most significant thing that I had. And then he just redirected me into coaching and have an opportunity to minister to and to support young people. So, you know, I'm just following God's path, and he led me in the direction of coaching.
So when you get a chance, obviously you transition from being a player into being a coach. Things change in terms of your relationship with the coaching staff, with Coach Flint. And so when you kind of got to go, for lack of a better way of saying it, behind the curtain with the coaching staff, what was that like to go from a player to a coach, just in terms of your relationship with the other coaches and maybe some of the things that you got to see or understand for the first time that maybe you didn't realize when you were a player?
Well, the thing was, so the first year that first season, it was Coach Flint's first year at Drexel. So Coach didn't recruit me.
Gotcha.
You know, I was recruited by the previous coaching staff. And then, you know, after my sophomore year, that coaching staff was let go. And then Coach Flint came in the spring. And then I was diagnosed with my condition in the fall. So it was still relatively new. The one thing that was obvious to me was that, you know, Coach Flint, Coach Jeff Arnold, Coach Chuck Martin, Coach Mike Connors, Coach Brian Gorman, those guys were the coaching staff. And, you know, they were completely different than the previous staff that I played for in terms of, you know, just how they, you know, their approach, you know, into player development, to coaching guys. You know, when I got behind the curtain with them, it was more or less those dudes were initiating me into the profession. You know what I mean?
Yep, like, exactly.
It was like, yo, man, you know, be seen and not heard. Like, we don't want to hear your opinions. you know, just follow our lead, do what we tell you to do, and you'll be all right. And I respected those guys a great deal. Obviously, they were Philly guys that had great success as players and coaches. Coach Flint was coming from UMass during his time with Coach Cal and the run that they had up there at UMass, building that program during the late 80s, early 90s. So, you know, Coach came with a ton of credibility, man, and he has the heart of gold. And, you know, I'm so thankful for that opportunity to learn from Coach Flint and Coach Jeff Arnold and Chuck Martin. Like, those guys took me under their wing and just taught me everything that I needed to see during that time about what the profession was about in terms of just being mentors and being, you know, being people that actually really cared about the players and their development, not just as players, but as people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you have people early in your career that pour into you, and I don't think it matters whether you're a coach or you're in any other profession, when you have people that are experienced that take you under their wing as a young person in a particular career, I think you're going to end up being way better off, not only from just the knowledge and the things that they're able to pour into you, but then I'm sure as time goes on, the relationships that you were able to build with all those guys helped you as you moved on in your career and you started looking for other opportunities. And now you have people who are friends in the profession that can send out a recommendation or touch base with somebody that they know that's part of their network to help you get to your next spot. And we all know in coaching and in basketball, like we talked about off the top, that those relationships and that connection is what, you know, you're one phone call away or one email away at this point from being able to be connected to people. And when you have good people on your side, it makes all the difference. So what I want to do is, Ash, go through just your different stops that you had as an assistant and kind of frame it this way, where if you would just share some of the things that you learned as an assistant, and obviously there's a ton, but maybe pick out two or three things that over the course of your career as an assistant coach that you learned, who you learned them from, and then how that's applied to what you've done since you've taken over the program at LaSalle. So just pull out two or three highlights from your career as an assistant, and then I want to dig into what you're doing to build the program there at LaSalle.
So, I started off assistant coach at LaSalle, graduated college 2004 and was able to land an assistant coach's position, right after I graduated, working for Dr. John Giannini. And during my time working for Coach G, he taught me just the work ethic component. Like I thought Dr. G was one of the most relentless workers, and for me to have the opportunity to work for him and just watch the way he would just, do everything. He recruited, he had his own list. He had it spelled out on his board every day. We would meet on recruiting. He would do his own scouts. My primary responsibility was player development, in my first year and then recruiting. And Dr. G would be involved in everything, man. Like he would wake up early and get shots up with one of his guys before they had class. He would, come back and, watch film all day of, our opponents. I just learned from that point forward, like, man, if I want to be a successful coach, like I have to work this way. And one thing that I respected about him was, he was working so tirelessly. I looked at myself and I said, man, I'm just a, young assistant coach. I can't allow him to look at me and say like, yo, he's working harder than I was. So I just followed his lead, in terms of recruiting. I just wanted to, every day just invest in recruiting, make phone calls, write letters, come up with different creative ways to connect with our recruits and sell our program and sell Dr. G. And I think he respected that about me because he saw that I was putting forth the effort to bring something different to the table and to help him build his program in his first year at LaSalle. Player development for me, I just wanted to be available, whether it was early mornings, late nights. I was 24 years old, young single guy. I had no excuses of why I wasn't available, right? So I just wanted to show Dr. G that was the type of work ethic that I was coming to the table with, and he gave me the free rein to really develop as a young assistant coach. But because I watched him do everything, he didn't necessarily tell me, look, Ash, this is what I want you to do. I just sort of kind of followed his lead and just used the previous staff at Drexel as a reference point to a lot of the things that I did. And then, after spending 4 years with Dr. G, I was able to go back to Drexel and work for Coach Brew. And, my mindset was, listen, man, like this is the guy that gave me my first opportunity to really get into coaching. And I wanted to help him achieve something that hadn't been achieved at Drexel during my time there. And, I think the goal was, we want to win the Colonial. And, in my 4 years there, I felt like, we developed, the guys that we had. We did a good job of recruiting, myself, Tony Childs, Matt Collier, Mike Connors. That was the staff during that time. And, we were able to put together some really good teams. And, the one thing I learned from Coach Brew is, organization. Right. He had one of the most organized, detailed practices that you'd ever see, especially in the beginning of the year when he's building up his defense, from how you pressure the ball to how you jump to the ball and then your gap, how you rotate from the help side, your communication, your exchanges, everybody being connected, speaking within the same terminology. Those are the things that I learned from Coach. And I thought that he was an underrated offensive coach. I felt like, my last couple years when we had the personnel that really fit his offensive system, we had great offensive teams. So, a lot of, the foundation of who I am as a coach comes from my time with Coach Flint in our Drexel days, just defensively and some of our offensive concepts. And then after that, I was able to go to Xavier, and you know, got an opportunity to you know, after 4 years at Drexel, you know, take a step outside of my comfort zone and leave Philadelphia and go out to Cincinnati. And Chris Mack, and I'll tell you, man, he's one of the best coaches in the country. And, you know, he, again, another guy that, you know, he allowed me to coach. He allowed me to come in and teach. Obviously, I had to learn his system, but, you know, he gave me free rein to have an opinion and to teach and pour into the young people out there in Cincinnati. And, you know, that was the first opportunity for me personally where within the infrastructure of the program, I was given the responsibility of doing scouts. So my time at Xavier really helped develop me as a young coach, because now I felt like I had the recruiting down. I felt like I had the relationships built in and I fostered some, and I felt like I was good in player development, getting on the floor, being able to teach the game, not just guards, but being able to, you know, work with bigs and wings and all positions in terms of player development. But now having an opportunity to do all those things and now do scouting as well, I think that really prepared me during my time at Xavier to make that next jump to Villanova. And then during my time at Villanova, you know, the thing that I learned the most was about culture and about, you know, having everybody on the same accord and having 100% buy-in from all members of the organization, and the impact that could have on the success of the program and everybody in it.
That was a great answer. You did a fantastic job of putting that together and making it coherent so that any coach who's out there listening, you know, you pulled out some things that clearly are going to impact you as a head coach. Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
Do you want to score more? Training with the Shotacle is the easiest way to score more. The game is changing, and data scientists are determining the best ways to score. Millions of computer simulations determine where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots and when it's best to use the backboard. The Shotacle provides those highest percentage shots. From beginners to next-level athletes, the Shotacle is helping players increase their shooting percentages. Visit Shotacle.com now and start scoring more.
So let's make that transition. Tell us a little bit about the interview process at LaSalle, what it was like, why you felt like you were prepared for, let's start with the interview and then we'll get to the job. Because I think it's always, we hear from coaches talking about they're trying to get prepared for an interview. So what did you do to prepare for that opportunity to make sure that when you walked in and you sat down in front of the interviewing committee that you knew you were prepared and you knew you were the right guy for the job? What was it that you had done in preparation that made you feel confident and ultimately earned you the job?
So, you know, the main thing for me was to, you know, as I was going into the end of that last season, I honestly, you don't know what jobs are going to open up. You don't know, you know, what opportunities are going to come about, right? The one thing that I wanted to do was I just wanted to make sure that I was prepared by just having some questions that most people have during the interview process, right? So I had a friend of mine, actually one of my former college teammates, who is an attorney, and his wife works with the NCAA. So he, he's connected with a lot of people, and we met one day. He's in Indy. I think we played at Butler. I was at Villanova, and we linked up, and he introduced me to a friend of his who was a consultant that worked with coaches. And this guy, he sent me a list of questions. It was about 20 questions, interview questions that are just standard interview questions during a head coach's interview. And I was able to just go through those questions and map out the, not just the answers, but to be able to tell a story, a compelling story as to why, I was the right fit. I didn't know it was going to be LaSalle. I was just thinking just in general, it was all generic. Right. And in all honesty, during the NCAA tournament that year, I actually interviewed for another school. I don't want to name the name because, just in confidence, like I interviewed for another program. And then the day after I interviewed for that program, the LaSalle job opened up. So, I was shocked that LaSalle opened up. I wasn't expecting it to. But since I had history there after being an assistant, having a connection there with the administration and some of the people, because there have been a lot of people that were there for a long time, it was something that was intriguing. I felt like I knew the school. I felt like I had the right experience to go into that interview with the confidence of knowing what LaSalle needed in order to move forward. So I went into that interview, with full confidence, and I didn't have my actual interview until after we won the national championship. So
that's a good way to walk into an interview.
Exactly, man. So going into that second interview after winning our second national championship gave me a little bit more confidence that, at least from, the standpoint of my experience, being a Philly guy, being a former assistant there and understanding the landscape, that I could go into that room and speak with the confidence that I knew, what was needed most to help LaSalle move forward.
Did you have a question or two for them? So obviously you prepared for the questions that they were going to ask you, but I'm sure going into an interview, there's things that you've learned along the way that you believe have to be in place from a school administrative facility standpoint. So were there questions that you prepared to ask them as part of the interview? Maybe just pull out one or two for coaches that might be heading into an interview themselves.
So the questions that I had were, what commitment was the university making to help the program, be competitive in Atlantic 10. Obviously, from our standpoint, facilities and resources was a concern, and I was assured during the interview that the university was willing to make advancements and had plans in place to make some significant changes, not just in the facilities, but also just in, just some, operational things that could help the program move forward, because there were some things that I felt were important in order to be successful. And it's not just facilities. It's, are you willing to, have a nutritionist? Are you willing to have a mental health person that works, a sports psychologist that works specifically with our team? Are we open to hiring our own, strength and conditioning coach? Because these are all things that, people don't see behind the scenes that make a huge impact on the program. And I asked, about, those things. And, I think part of it in the process, I was educating LaSalle on these are some of the things that other programs have in place that you don't necessarily see. People think that it's all about the facilities, but if you have the right infrastructure in place and the right people in place, you can build a strong program. So, you know, those were some of the questions that I asked, and you know, fortunate enough for me, I was able to receive you know, most of the things that I've asked for and the things that I haven't received yet. You know, I know the university is working diligently to do, but you know, in lieu of, you know, COVID-19 and this pandemic that we're in now, you know, I think that, you know, we're just, you know, we're fighting to make sure that, we take care of our students and that we're functioning as a university as a whole. So, you know, some of, you know, the things that I know I wanted going in, you know, they have to, you know, take a backseat to some more trying things. But I'm just, you know, happy with my relationship with our administration, the commitment that they've shown me to wanting to build this program. And, you know, I'm excited about the direction that we're going in.
Yeah, it's a crazy time for sure. And so I think everybody's priorities and things that you never would have imagined a year ago that you'd be having to focus on and do and deal with is throwing a wrench into everybody's plans. I guess the only positive is that we're all in the same boat to some degree because everybody's dealing with it in one way or another. So I want to go back to when you first get that job and you come in and you're looking around. In the first, let's say, 3 months, what did you prioritize first? Give me one or two things that when you sat down day after you get the job and you're putting together the plan of what you want the program to look like, what were one or two things that you prioritized immediately and said, I have to get these things done, or I have to start working on these immediately if I want to get where we need to go?
Well, if I'm being honest, I feel like I may have missed the boat a little bit because, you know, I had a late start because obviously we played, you know, all the way up until the last game that year. So I didn't get the job until mid-April. I wanted to jump in and I was prioritizing recruiting and you know, recruiting, you know, guys that, you know, were borderline players that I was recruiting at Villanova and trying to target those guys to come to LaSalle and, you know, spending a lot of time with them. You know, me being a recruiter at Villanova, I felt like, you know, as a head coach, you know, I have an opportunity now to give my sales pitch and to develop those relationships as a head coach, that would help me, you know, land some of, the high major prospects that I was recruiting while I was at Villanova at LaSalle. And, you know, I was, you know, putting together my staff, you know, but primarily just with the recruiting focus, you know, that's where my mind was at the time. And I was, you know, getting on the floor with the guys and, you know, just have an opportunity to coach and teach, and start to implement my own ideas. I didn't necessarily take a look at, okay, like, all right, we got it. You know, there was a team, like we didn't have anybody leave. Like none of the previous players that were on, Coach G's staff made the decision to leave. You know, all of the incoming recruits, they decided they were staying. All of the returning players decided that they were staying. I didn't have anybody leave. So, you know, as much as I wanted to bring in other players, like I had limited scholarships because there wasn't any movement. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
And, you know, one of the things that that ended up happening was, you know, after year one, then I had a bunch of guys leave because, you know, at the end of the day, I realized that, you know, some guys, you know, just didn't fit what we were doing. Other guys, you know, didn't necessarily want to meet the new expectation. And, you know, the one thing that I look at and I say is, you know, maybe if I had to do anything over again, maybe I would have, you know, just kind of given all of those guys, you know, a fresh start, gave them the opportunity to find another school and then, you know, maybe start from scratch, you know, year one, you know, bringing in our own guys. So if I look at it, hindsight being 2020, I think that's one of the things that I may have done differently. But, you know, the one thing that I felt like we did was I felt like we set the tone in terms of the culture that we wanted to bring in. And, I felt like we brought in a strong coaching staff. I hired, Kenny Johnson from LaSalle. From Louisville. Hired one of my former players in Kyle Griffin, who's now our associate head coach. And then we also hired Donnie Carr, who's a LaSalle legend, Philadelphia Big Five legend. We had a strong staff. We had guys that really understood recruiting and that believed in me and my vision. When we first got in there, we didn't have the flexibility that we wanted in terms of scholarships. And, we were hopeful going into that first year that we would be able to develop some of the guys that we had and that, they were staying. All right, we'll invest in those dudes. But then, you missed out on the opportunity to bring in some guys in certain positions that first year because you didn't have the scholarships. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I know exactly. Yeah.
The area that we focused on. And in all honesty, sometimes you can learn from the mistakes you made. And I think, one of the things that we probably should have done when we first got the job was kind of, open up some room from the start. I think it would have helped in terms of just the build, but we've been able to bounce back, after we had those openings, we were able to fill them with some talented young guys that are our type of guys that are helping us move this needle forward at LaSalle. So we're excited about where we are. Whenever you're taking over a program and you're building, it's going to be a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And, for me, just having to go through this experience, it's been a learning experience, man. I think everybody thinks when you're an assistant that you're ready, right? And then you get thrown into that fire and you realize, man, like, I respect the guys that I work for that much more.
For sure.
And I'm just excited to now be in a position where, I think our program is right where we need it to be.
All right, I want to be respectful of your time. I want to finish up with one more question. It's a two-parter that I've kind of been ending a lot of our episodes on lately, and that is when you look forward here, and you can put whatever timeline you want on this question, what do you think is the biggest challenge that you have in front of you at LaSalle? And then number two, what is the biggest joy that you have in waking up every morning and being the head coach at LaSalle University?
So I think the biggest challenge right now is that our league is probably the most underrated conference in the country, and the Atlantic 10 has some great young coaches, great programs, and we want to compete for championships. Like that's what we want, and our league is a beast. And, I think our biggest challenge is, keeping our team together with the climate of college basketball, immediate transfers, eligibilities. I think the biggest challenge we're going to have is as we develop our players, because player development is going to be key. The challenge for us is going to be to keep this team together so that we can, put together a really, really good team. And I think we're trending in that direction. But a lot of the other external things that are going on right now are going to make it a challenge for mid-major programs. So, player development, continuing to keep the relationships pure and genuine within our players and their families so that they know that, we're providing the best opportunity for them at LaSalle is going to be key for us moving forward. And I think we have the staff in place to do it. I think we have the players that we need in order to build this program and to get to the point where we can compete for championships. So, it's just a matter of time and keeping this group together. And And the thing that I love the most about waking up as the head coach at LaSalle is being, you know, close to my family, being in the community that I grew up in, and having the opportunity to, you know, use my platform to, you know, inspire people from my community, to use my platform to be able to give back to our community, use my platform to be able to feed these young people the information that they need to be successful, and to teach them the responsibility that they have to give back to where they come from. You know, I think it's easy to get caught up in yourself when you're a Division I coach. You know, I think we all take ourselves a little too seriously at times. But for me to be in this position where I'm still right here at home in Philadelphia, and to still be close to this community and have the opportunity to give back, I think that's what really fuels me and motivates me. And to be able to do it, you know, around my friends and my family and support system, is something that I don't take for granted, and that I thank God for every day.
That impact beyond basketball and being able to do it in your own community, I'm sure, is just hugely special for you. Before we get out, Ash, I want to give you a chance to share where people can reach out to you, where they can find out more about your program. If you want to share your social media handles, website, whatever you'd like to share, so that people can reach out if they have questions, they want to just talk some basketball with you and follow your program, just let us know how we can do that, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
So you can find me. I'm easy to find. It's Coach Ash Howard on Twitter, and it's Coach Ash 5 on Instagram. And, you know, our LaSalle handle is LaSalle MBB on Instagram. And on Twitter, it's LaSalle _MBB. So, you know, I appreciate this opportunity, Mike, to share my story. You know, I'm looking forward to heading into this season. And, you know, if anybody ever wants to reach out to us, you know, we love the support. We love to engage with our basketball community all over the country.
Ash, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on the podcast with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure getting a chance to hear your story. And we're going to be watching what you do and how you build the program there at LaSalle. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.